Hello, this is Madge Weinstein once again with Yeast Radio. Now, I suppose I should finish reading my wonderful little holiday speech, but first I need to talk about some things. Namely, that Gussie has gone completely insane. The Alzheimer's has completely made her brain moldy, and she's gone completely wacko. I think I'm going to have to send her over to the, whatever you call it, the mortuary. I'm going to have to send Gussie to the mortuary with her bald, red-haired cunt, because she's making me crazy with all these demands and her delusions, and she's being so nasty to me. I mean, I can understand a person being senile, but why do they have to be so goddamn mean, calling me a goddamn fat bitch all the time? I don't appreciate that kind of talk from my lover, Gussie. Anyway, the other thing I want to mention before we go to that story, that nice story I was telling you yesterday, is, I was with my therapist today, and he was telling me that there's this new fad in the news that evidently some of these Christian groups, whatever they're called, are insisting that the department stores call it Christmas instead of holidays, that they should say Happy Christmas instead of Happy Holidays, because it's really Christmas and they want to put the Christ back in Christmas. Now, I haven't paid attention to this mainstream media lately, so I didn't know about this. But my reaction is the following. I have no comment on this because, like I said yesterday, there are thousands of people dying every day in Iraq. We are killing people all the time. Not thousands every day. There's thousands of people that have died in Iraq. We are killing people left and right. Yes, we're responsible. We're the taxpayers. And we, as the majority of us anyway, voted for the asshole to continue killing people. God damn it, that's Gussie again. She's going to be a cunt. Hold on. Hold on, gentle Lord. Oy vey, Christ. Yeah, that was Gussie, all right. Poor thing, she's having a terrible time. You know, these mental illnesses aren't easy. You know, life is really stupid. And what's the point? Anyway, no, there's a point. I'm sure there's a point. Because the way that our DNA is just like the computer, and they're already starting to use DNA as computer shit. Ah, who gives a crap? Now I'm starting to sound like Gussie. Crazy. Anyway, I want to finish telling you my story about how I fell in love with a very famous person, and I'm going to just start it over and just go all the way through until Gussie calls me again, because I don't think it really is fair to do this in little segments and whatnot. It was 1967, the first full day of Hanukkah. I remember because my father, Irving Weinstein, had just given me a beautiful sterling silver bracelet the night before on Erev Hanukkah. I was working for my father at the Weinstein and Schlump Funeral Home on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx. I worked in the office doing secretarial work and making funeral arrangements. Well, that day, as I was going through the list of the next day's funerals, I just about shit my pants. I read Ethel Levitt, daughter of Robert Levitt and Ethel Zimmerman. Zimmerman. Zimmerman? Ethel Merman? I was about to arrange the funeral for Ethel Merman's daughter. I couldn't feel my toes. I suddenly felt like I had just inhaled a whole tank of nitrous oxide. I was having a near-death experience. I was about to meet Ethel Merman. Jesus, I had already seen Gypsy 3 times and wore out my phonograph needle listening to Everything's Coming Up Roses over and over again. Christ, how I wanted to lick her pussy. Oh, and how I masturbated about Ethel, with that huge mouth of hers surrounding my vagina. Imagine those same lips that made There's No Business Like Show Business famous, functioning only to form a suction cup around my beaver. It was just too much. Ethel Merman was hot, and I wanted her badly. I knew she was a dyke, too, having married and divorced that horrible Ernest Borgnine in less than a year's time. Plus, I saw how she looked at Gypsy Rose Lee wantingly every time she did that striptease number. It was gaydar long before Oprah coined the term. I scrambled to make the funeral as tasteful as possible. I went to the florist and handpicked the most beautiful flowers I could find. I made sure the chapel was spotless, and I cleaned out all the toilets. I filled up the tissue dispensers, too. Then the big question, what to wear? I went to my cousin Pincus's dress shop and borrowed the most gorgeous black taffeta dress. Then I had my hair done, too. Needless to say, I couldn't sleep a wink that night, so excited to meet my role model, an object of female lust. 10 a.m. the next day, I was standing next to my father in the foyer of the funeral home, and a Cheka cab pulled up. I figured it was probably a relative or something, since Ethel herself would surely arrive in a limousine. A woman dressed in a long black coat, a black pillbox hat and a muff on her hands walked slowly towards us. She was alone, her head bent down. We opened the door and she entered the foyer. She turned her face to me, not to my father. Her mascara was running down her face, but she looked at me and she actually smiled. Again, my body lost all sense of gravity as my skin became totally numb. It was her. It was Ethel Merman herself, looking into my eyes, crying. As if on autopilot, I said to her, "My condolences, Ms. Merman." Ethel opened her mouth and raised her right index finger as if to make a wisecrack, but she stopped herself before speaking, gave me a polite nod, a knowing smile, and proceeded to greet my father. A few other guests arrived. There were only a dozen or so guests in total. Ethel seemed to ignore all of them. She just kept looking down the whole time, trying not to show emotion. I was the only person she made eye contact with. She looked at me about every 30 seconds or so. A knowing gleam is how I would describe it, and it turned me to mush every time. I just melted, and it wasn't for the reason I predicted. I knew Ethel would make me nervous and jittery because she was a huge star and I was one of her biggest fans. But when I looked at Ethel and she looked at me straight from those beautiful hazel eyes, I felt something I'd never felt before. It was love. A future with Ethel Merman passed before my eyes. I pictured us growing old together. Of course, she was already old. Ethel was at least 30 years older than me, not to mention the other logistical problems, including, but not limited to, the facts that Ethel was a huge star and that she and I were both women. Oy. There was no such thing as lesbian chic back then. I don't think anyone even knew lesbians even existed, and I had never even been with another woman at that point. I mean, I knew I liked them and wanted to eat another woman out, but I didn't think it would be entirely practical. Weekly bridge games were the closest I thought I would ever come to lesbian sex. So they all started to leave, and Ethel sort of lingered behind. We were flirting, I think. "What's your name, kid?" she asked me. "Madge," I told her. She smiled bravely. "Madge, do you want to go for a cup of coffee with me?" I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Ethel Merman wanted to go out for a cup of coffee with me. "Yes," my shaky voice replied. So I grabbed my coat and we went over to the 142nd Street Delicatessen. We sat down at a booth. I ordered coffee and a bagel with cream cheese. She ordered hot tea. "Yes, Ms. Merman," the waiter gleefully obeyed. "You're a lot like her," Ethel announced. "Excuse me," I said. I was confused. "You're a lot like my Ethel. Ethel Junior. She was a real look of that girl. She didn't get her looks from me, though." Ethel laughed. "But you're a beautiful woman, Ms. Merman," I told her, and I meant it. Ethel quickly replied, "I know that, kid. I was just joking. Call me Ethel." She stuck her hand out at me and smiled with a small tear in her left eye. It was strange to see. She was joking around, acting like nothing was wrong, but she looked profoundly sad in her eyes. Ethel suddenly got a serious look on her face as she continued to speak. "I want to give you this. It was a Hanukkah present for Ethel." I was going to give it to her last night. I want you to have it, Madge, because you remind me of her. Ethel handed me a small gift-wrapped box. The wrapping paper was blue with little silver menorahs and dreidels all over it. Attached to the box was a card in a white envelope, and on it was her daughter's name, Ethel Jr. She quickly grabbed it and put the card in her purse and clasped it shut. She looked at the box and told me, "Open it!" I did, carefully pulling the tape off the paper so the paper shouldn't rip. We both said, "Save the paper," at the same time and laughed. Everyone saved the wrapping paper back then, but nobody knew why. It was a blue velveteen box. I opened it, and inside was the most beautiful pendant I'd ever seen. A rose, like Gypsy Rose Lee, I guess. I was touched. "Do you have a chain?" Ethel asked. "Yes, I'm wearing one right now," I told her. "Hand it to me, sweetie," Ethel said. I unclasped the chain and gave it to Ethel. She took the rose pendant and put it on the chain. I felt Ethel's hands gently caressing my neck as she fastened the clasp of the chain. Her hands were cold, but so soft and gentle as she touched me, 1,000 butterflies took flight from my stomach. Ethel rested her hands on my shoulder for what seemed like an eternity, but must have only been a second in reality. And you know how they talk about hearing fireworks when it's love? Well, I heard Ethel Merman singing, "Honey, everything's coming up, roses and daffodils, everything's coming up, sunshine and Santa Claus, everything's gonna be bright lights and lollipops, everything's coming up, roses for me and for you." I came. I couldn't help it. I fucking came, and I came hard. And it felt like I was at high tide at the beaches of Napoli, and the biggest fucking tidal wave crashed on top of me. It crashed on top of me, and I came. Ein glickes mir bekommen. My panties were soaked, and I'm sure she must have noticed the feminine scent caused by my event. While I was orgasming, Ethel was still standing above me. I don't know how much time passed. It may have been a second or two, or it may have been 10 minutes. But it was such ecstasy, such pure bliss, that I was in another place altogether. I mean, now here I am reliving this for you, my gentle audience, and I'm realizing right now that Ethel Merman was the love of my life. Sure, there were others. They all gave up on me. I don't know why. Some of them said I was too caustic. Others said, "I'm just not ready for a relationship." But they all meant the same fucking thing. "Madge, you're a caustic fucking bitch, and I can't stand you for 10 seconds, let alone spend the rest of my entire goddamn life with you. Now get out of my face, you fat fucking cunt." Christ, I need a cheese steak. Ethel sat, looked down, gracefully picked up her cup of tea, and took a sip. She slowly, yet very deliberately, glanced up at me with their heavenly goddess eyes that could melt me like chicken schmaltz. Ethel smiled. She put her cup down and said to me, "I'd look beautiful on you." "Huh?" I said. "The necklace, it looks beautiful on you," she said. "Thank you," I answered, in a voice so soft it was barely a whisper. The waiter placed the bill down on the table. Ethel picked it up and looked at it. "Shall we?" she asked, coldly and with a tone of finality. A wave of shocking disappointment came over my body. "It's been a slice, kid. You've been great for me. So much like my poor little Ethel Jr. So sweet. Stay strong, kid. You'll need to." That was the last I ever saw of Ethel Merman. Sure, I've had other lovers. Martina, Ellen, KD, Melissa, Rosie. Oy, Rosie. But I still never had an orgasm like the one I had with Ethel that day. Ethel showed me love. It may have only lasted 10 minutes, but it was true love, and true love is timeless. Did you know that on every Luna bar, there's a dedication on the back? From one woman of Luna to another? Goddamn, Gussie, hold on a second. And believe it or not, they printed it on my favorite Luna bar, Sesame Almond Crunch. I'm going to close by reading it for you now. Dear Ethel, you showed me love, and you made me the woman I am today. You taught me that I have to be strong in order to bear this cruel world. You also taught me that you have to be weak in order to love, and that's something I'm still working on. Love, Madge, a woman of Luna. And that's all we have for Yeast Radio today. See you tomorrow.